Welcome to our show. This is Ayan Khan. There has been a debate within the scientific community on the origins of life on planet Earth. Charles Robert Darwin, an English naturalist and geologist, his works, Origin of Species and the Descent of Man, heavily impacted the domains of science and social sciences, also many intellectual circles. But even today, many scientists disagree with Darwin and his research and his opinions. Today, our show is based upon the topic of errors of Charles Darwin. To discuss this topic, we have with us today Dr. Fazal Rana. He is an American scientist, biochemist, also an author, and the Vice President of Reasons to Believe. Also joining us from Istanbul, Turkey, we have with us today Dr. Akhtar Babuna, a neurologist and also a prominent critique of Charles Darwin and theory of evolution. Welcome to our show, Dr. Fazal Rana. This is Ayan Khan. It's a pleasure to have you on our show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Thank you so much, Dr. Akhtar Babuna, for being on our show. It was a pleasure having you.
It's my pleasure. Thank you very much. And hello to both of you.
Let's get to the first question, and I'll ask Dr. Fazal Rana, give a brief picture of what technology Darwin had access to when he wrote his book, Origin of Species.
Yeah, well, when Darwin wrote Origin of Species, which would have been over 150 years ago, the primary scientific technology he would have had access to would have been essentially a microscope. So the technology we enjoy today as scientists simply wasn't available to Darwin when, again, he wrote Origins of Species. In fact, most of what we know about biology today was unknown to Darwin when he, again, crafted Origins of Species.
Dr. Akhtar Babuna, what do you think are the two most significant scientific facts that if Darwin had known might have greatly impacted his theory?
So Darwinism proposes that human beings are came into this world as a result of chance events, and they are species of animals. And furthermore, it claims that there is only a selfish struggle for survival and to stay alive. So that's, of course, a very unscientific and illogical claim. First of all, we have to look very fundamentally at the beginning of life. As you know, all the living things are made up cells. Cells are made up organelles and billions of protein molecules. So proteins are the building blocks of the living things. So then, if Darwinism claims life originated by chance, then we have to check this claim scientifically. And we have to look at the protein molecules. If it's possible for a single protein molecule to emerge by chance, by random events, by natural selection, by mutation, they claim, these are imaginary mechanisms of evolution, of course. Then we see proteins, this is a scientific fact, the proteins can only be synthesized by other proteins. For a single protein to exist, at least 100 different proteins must exist before to synthesize this protein. This is not enough. A DNA must exist for the right sequence of the protein molecules, because proteins can only function if they are in the right sequence that's encoded in the DNA. So DNA must coexist. But this is not enough. Energy must exist for the synthesis of the proteins, so energy organelle of the cell must exist. Energy, DNA, ribosomes, and RNA molecules, they must coexist at the same time in a living cell. So proteins can only be synthesized in a living cell by other proteins. This is the most fundamental evidence of which refutes Darwinism, because it is impossible to emerge a single protein molecule by chance. It must be created. The cell must be created first, and then it can synthesize the protein molecules, and not vice versa. So this is a most fundamental blow to the Darwinist claims. The second one is, of course, it is asserted that species evolved to other species by successive minute variations over billions of years. That's the Darwinist claim. So then evolutionists have to show us these successive minute changes in the fossilized examples. We can only know from the fossils, which are the remnants of the living things, which lived in the past, which kind of species lived in the past. So when we look at the fossil evidence, of course, since Darwinism claims that species evolved to other species by successive minute variations, then we see these transitions between so-called transitions between species in the fossilized examples. So we have to see pathological and asymmetrical, since it's caused by by natural events, by random, by chance, they say, pathological and asymmetrical transition between the species. So if you look at the so-called transitional forms, so we have to see, according to Darwin's claim, we have to see half fish, half reptile, half bird, half reptile, half mammal fossilized examples. We don't see any of them. There is not even a single transitional form. There is not even a single transitional pathological asymmetrical form which exists in the history. Species appear abruptly, complete and perfectly formed. We have 600 million fossils today. We don't see any transitions. We see either sea animals, or we see reptiles, or we see mammals, or we see only elephants, tigers, apes, but nothing in between. There is no half organ, pathological and asymmetrical transition between the species. That is, of course, definitely a very strong blow to Darwin's claims. And this fact was admitted, actually, by Charles Darwin himself. Charles Darwin stated in his book of Original Species that there are no transitional forms, but he hoped they could be found in the future. Now, we have today a very famous, very prominent Darwinist paleontologist, fossil scientists such as Stephen Jay Gould or Niles Eldridge. They all admit that transitional forms does not exist. And life appeared, this is the third most powerful evidence, the life appeared on Earth all of a sudden. Cyanobacteria, the blue algae, they exist all of a sudden, came into being all of a sudden, 3.8 billion years ago. This is published by in Nature magazine and other magazines. In Australia, Chert region, we found the fossils of the cyanobacteria. All of a sudden, sudden appearance. Of course, sudden appearance means no evolution. And the species, they appear abruptly, complete and perfectly formed, and they never change during their tenure on Earth. And this is admitted by Stephen Jay Gould as sudden appearance. And stasis, he said. Stasis means no change of the species. Of course, that means all the living things, plants, animals, and human beings are created with a sudden creation by God and not through evolution.
Dr. Rana, as a scientist, would you like to add anything and let us know if you disagree with Dr. Akhtar Babuna?
Yeah, well, I agree with Dr. Akhtar Babuna's very nice characterization of some of the discoveries we've made in modern biology that I think really challenge the evolutionary paradigm. You know, for example, Darwin was very careful not to address the question of the origin of life and origins of species, but in private communications to his friends, he discussed the idea of life emerging out of a warm little pond. And of course, this idea was picked up in the 1920s by J.B.S. Haldane, a British geneticist, and Alexander Oparin, a Russian biochemist, as they propose this idea that life emerges out of a prebiotic or a primordial soup, where chemical processes generate materials, chemical materials that would accumulate on the Earth's oceans and then would self-organize over time for life forms. But we now know that there's no evidence whatsoever for a prebiotic soup on Earth. We have rocks that go back to 3.8 billion years. We have mineral deposits in those rocks that are 0.2 to 0.4 billion years. We see no evidence whatsoever in any of these geological records for the existence of a prebiotic soup, which should leave behind some kind of fingerprint if it indeed existed. And so this idea, which is the cornerstone idea in biology textbooks, when Darwin's theory of evolution is taught, is a scientific myth. It's not an established scientific fact. And you couple that with work on the Miller-Urey experiment, a famous experiment that also shows up in biology. Stanley Miller generated amino acids under purported conditions of the early Earth, where he was trying to simulate those conditions in the laboratory. But we now know that the conditions of the early Earth were very different than what Miller employed in his experiment. And if we actually utilize those conditions, we see a null result, that is, no amino acids form, which are the building blocks of proteins. And so not only, as Dr. Akhtar Babuna pointed out, we see a sudden appearance of complex bacteria almost instantaneously on the surface of the Earth as soon as the Earth is capable of supporting life, which is, I think, a serious blow to the evolutionary paradigm. We also see no evidence for a prebiotic soup, and the famous Miller-Urey experiment is essentially irrelevant to the origin of life question because Miller was not using appropriate conditions in his experiment. And so this, I think, is an incredibly significant challenge. And, you know, as Dr. Babina pointed out, the fossil record doesn't support the evolutionary paradigm as well. You know, as Dr. Babina pointed out, Darwin made a number of predictions in his book, Origins of Species, none of which actually transpire. He lamented about the fossil record, as Dr. Babina pointed out, where there was an absence of transitional forms. He also lamented about another characteristic of the fossil record, which we now know or call the Cambrian explosion. But in Darwin's day, he noted that in geological layers beneath the Cambrian, which is about dates between 540 and 490 million years in age, but in rock layers beneath the Cambrian, we see no evidence for complex multicellular organisms. And then suddenly, in the Cambrian layer, we see fully formed organisms where virtually every animal phyla that has ever existed on Earth shows up in a geological instant. And Darwin hoped that as time transpired and we characterized the fossil record to a greater degree, this enigma would disappear. The fact of the matter is, 150-plus years of research into the history of life has confirmed that the Cambrian explosion is a real event. And there is no evolutionary history preceding the animal life when it first appears on Earth. It shows up explosively and suddenly. This is called biology's Big Bang, and it is one of the greatest things confronting evolutionary biology. But to me, it looks like a signature for into existence these animal forms, and voila, we see those animal forms on the surface of the Earth. And so I think the fossil record and, again, questions surrounding the origin of life really are two of the most significant problems. And, of course, you know, as Dr. Babina was alluding to, Darwin's concept of the cell was a blob of jelly-like material that was surrounded by a membrane. Well, we now know that the cell is an incredibly complex environment. It's unbelievably complex. And that complexity, I think, again, is a significant challenge to the evolutionary paradigm, because it's not just simply complexity, but we're looking at very sophisticated, elegant systems inside the cell that are beautiful and marvelous to behold. In fact, many of the systems inside the cell literally resemble man-made machinery and man-made devices. There are motors that are formed from protein complexes that operate at near 100% efficiency. The machinery that manipulates DNA during the replication process is literally functioning like a computer system at its most basic level. And so again, when you put all this together, it's very difficult to imagine Darwin even advancing something like his theory of evolution if he really knew then what we know now about biology.
Dr. Anna, getting back to you, what is the Miller-Urey experiment and why is it still in the textbooks?
Yeah, the Miller-Urey experiment is considered to be a landmark experiment in the history of science. This is an experiment done in the 1950s by chemist Stanley Miller and his research advisor, Harold Urey, who was a Nobel laureate. And this was the first attempt to experimentally validate what's known as the Oparin-Haldane hypothesis, the idea that life could emerge out of a prebiotic or a primordial soup. And many people think that this experiment inaugurated the origin of life research program as a scientific discipline, a scientific area of study. And what Miller did is he assembled a glass apparatus that had a boiling flask of water. He was very careful to remove oxygen from the headspace of the system, and he introduced gases like hydrogen and ammonia and methane into the system. There was water vapor in the headspace as well, and he sent a continuous electrical discharge through the headspace and in short order produced amino acids, which are the building blocks of proteins. And this was heralded as a significant scientific advance that demonstrated the credibility of, again, this idea that life emerges out of a prebiotic soup. Unfortunately, when Miller and Urey did this experiment, the conditions they employed for the atmosphere of the Earth, or to simulate the atmosphere of the Earth, are not the conditions that we now know existed on the early Earth. It would have been a mixture of nitrogen, a water vapor, and carbon dioxide. And with that gas mix, basically nothing will form. And in fact, we now think that there was even low levels of oxygen on the early Earth. And if there was any oxygen present, it would have essentially frustrated even further the chemistry needed to produce amino acids. So in other words, this experiment that is considered historically a landmark experiment, that turns out to be irrelevant to the origin of life question because Miller employed incorrect conditions in his experiment relative to what we now know as the conditions of the early Earth. And yet this experiment shows up in biology textbooks being illustrative of the fact that chemists can go in the lab and simulate reactions that would have happened on the early Earth, and in doing so, validate or justify this idea of chemical evolution or abiogenesis. But just like the Miller-Urey experiment is plagued with problems in terms of it being relevant to the conditions of the early Earth, one could actually argue many of the experiments done in prebiotic chemistry today still suffer from that very problem. And so even though scientists can go in the lab and they claim they can replicate different steps for the origin of life, in reality, that work that's done in the lab more than likely would not ever translate to the conditions of the early Earth. And why is it still in biology textbooks? This is a really good question. To me, as somebody who is a creationist, I'm very frustrated with the fact that biology textbooks are not properly portraying the science surrounding the origin of life question.
How would you like to respond to this question, Dr. Akhtar Bibuna? Do you agree with Dr. Fazal Rana?
Yes, Dr. Rana explained it actually very nicely. And this is Miller experiment claimed to produce amino acids in the primordial conditions of the Earth was invalidated by the scientific evidence. This is most importantly. He used methane, ammonia, water vapor, and nitrogen. But it turned out in the so-called primitive atmosphere, ammonia and methane did not exist. Instead of that, he must have used nitrogen and carbon dioxide. But if he did not use these on purpose, because if he would use carbon dioxide and nitrogen, he would not get amino acids. In fact, he got only 3 amino acids out of the 20 amino acids which are necessary for the life to exist. And second thing is, he did not use oxygen. So, but we know today from there are oxidized rocks 3.5 billion years old that we know in the very old times, at the beginning of life, oxygen existed in the atmosphere. So if Miller would have used oxygen in his experiments, of course it would react immediately with the amino acids and it would destroy them. So he did not use oxygen. But if oxygen would not exist, it did exist, we know from the scientific facts. Imagine oxygen did not exist in the beginning of the life 3.8 billion years ago. That means no ozone layer in the atmosphere. That means ultraviolet from the sun emitting to the world would increase thousands of times. And this is also a very serious blow to existence of life. Life could not exist without ozone layer. So in both ways, if you would use oxygen or didn't use oxygen, to get amino acids by chance is impossible. So he also got organic acids in his experiments that would immediately react with the amino acids. You know what he did? He took the amino acids and he used a cold trap in his experiments. It, of course, does not exist in the nature. He isolated amino acids immediately not to have get destroyed them. So we know today scientifically Miller experiments or any kind of experiments is invalid because amino acids, again, can only be synthesized in living cells by other proteins. There are tens of different proteins, enzymes must exist to produce amino acids. This is not enough. Amino acids are not enough to have the protein molecules. If you leave amino acids in the nature, they get destroyed immediately, and they never do peptide bonds. Peptide bonds are special bonds between the amino acids to produce protein molecules. So peptide bonds can only be done by a specific enzyme called peptidyl transferase in the ribosome molecules. So ribosome must exist. DNA must exist again to have the right sequence of the amino acids. this can only be done by the ribosome with the DNA and a living cell only in a special conditions. But this is not enough. These the polypeptide chains must be threefoldly bonded. And this can only be done by special proteins like chaperone proteins in a living cell again. So again, scientific facts shows us proteins can only be synthesized in the living cells, and this is otherwise proteins to emerge by chance, as evolutionists claim or Darwinism claims, is impossible. It's zero. Impossible.
Dr. Atre Babuna, if Darwin was alive today and had all the technology that's now available, do you think he would be as committed to his original theory as evolutionists are?
Well, definitely not, because at the time of Darwin, the technology was very primitive, as Dr. Vanna explained a little while ago. There was only primitive microscopes. He thought the cells are balloons full of jelly or water, they thought. But then it turned out there is DNA, there is very complex molecular biology, genetics, epigenetics, very complex mechanisms created by God. So scientific evidence shows us there's definitely the complex things, the complex structure of the living things can only be created by a creator with omnipotent mind. So again, the emergence of the proteins, the lack of the transitional forms are fatal blow to Darwinism, and we know scientifically God did not create through evolution, but God created with a sudden creation with his word be. That's stated in all the holy books, in the Bible, in the Torah, and in the Quran, of course. And science tells us the same thing, scientific evidences. But the problem with the Darwinism is, Darwinism has led to many ideologies, including Marxism, fascism, imperialism, and white capitalism. So, for example, Darwinism claims there is a conflict between the living things. The strong always overcomes the weak, and this enables the development to take place. So conflict is a motivating force, according to Darwinism. And the Marxism is founded upon the ideas of the Darwin. In one of his letters, Marx stated that this is the basis in natural history for our view, for the origin of species, in the letter he wrote to Engels. So they founded their Marxist theory on the Darwinism, because they thought Darwinism is the dialectics of the nature and Marxism is the dialectics of the history. So again, this caused 150 million deaths in the 20th century because of the communist regime, Stalin and Mao regime, as you know, because of Lenin. And then, of course, Adolf Hitler and Mussolini emerged in Europe because of, they said, struggle between the races, as Darwin's claim, struggle between the species. And they said there's a struggle between the races. He got the struggle concept from the Darwinism. And Hitler said, take away the Nordic Germans and nothing remains but the Denisov apes. The result is 8 million deaths. So if we take away the Darwinism, which is an ethical understanding and method, there's no ideology of conflict remains. Religion brings good morality, compassion, mercy, love, and killing an innocent person is like murdering entire humanity, says God in the holy books. So there is so much love in the Bible, in the Christianity. But if we ally with the Christian believers and with the Jewish believers and with the Muslim believers and with science and technology, of course with ideas against ideas, we can eradicate these false claims of Darwinism and will bring love, compassion, mercy, love, security to the world, and this will end all the wars and bloodshed.
Dr. Anna, do you agree with Dr. Atre Babuna or do you disagree?
No, I would, you know, strongly agree with Dr. Babuna, not only in terms of his technical arguments, but I think also in terms of just the way in which the evolutionary paradigm cashes out in terms of not only individual people's lives, but in the way in which societies operate. And I would contend that if you think that you ultimately are the product of unguided, undirected evolutionary processes, then it means that your life has no purpose, that human life has no real meaning or ultimate purpose. And that can be devastating for an individual. It can be devastating for a society. And I think many of the social ills that we see in the world around us today, particularly in the West, but I would say throughout the world, is traceable back to a view of humanity that flows out of the evolutionary paradigm. And so I would very much agree with Dr. Babuna that this paradigm is, again, significant in terms of the consequences it has. And this idea, an academic idea confined to the ivory tower, it's an idea that has influenced and has permeated our world and our culture with, again, I think, devastating effects. And not only, again, are the psychological and sociological effects horrendous and the societal effects, as Dr. Babuna is pointing out, but I think there's also scientific issues with this idea. It's not a sound idea, scientifically speaking, and yet it, again, is a view that has been become entrenched within our culture, within our world, with devastating consequences.
Dr. Anna, last question, and I'm going to be asking you the same question. If Darwin was alive today and had all the technology that's now available, do you think he would still be as committed to his original theory?
I mean, it would be tempting, I think, on one hand to say probably not, because he did make some very clear predictions in Origins of Species about what needed to be discovered for his theory to have credibility, and yet we've made advances in biology that essentially show that his predictions are invalid. So you'd like to think if he was functioning strictly as a scientist, he would not have been as committed to his paradigm as people are today. But I think it's also important to recognize that there's a very strong philosophical, maybe even a theological component to the evolutionary paradigm. I don't think it's evidence that strictly drives acceptance of biological evolution. I think part of it is philosophical. People, number one, see this as a way to replace or supplant God as a creator. If evolutionary mechanisms can account for the origin and the history of the design of life, then what role does a creator need to play? And so people who want to move away from a religious perspective are going to have to embrace some form of the evolutionary paradigm. Richard Dawkins, in his book, The Blind Watchmaker, pointed out that Darwin makes it possible to be an intellectually satisfied atheist because, again, he sees evolutionary mechanisms supplanting God's role as creator. And so there is a philosophical component to the evolutionary paradigm. In fact, there's even, I think, a theological component. Darwin didn't write his book, Origins of Species, until after the death of his daughter, Anne. And he was essentially angry at God, asking the question, how could God allow for something like this to happen? And so when he looked at nature, he saw horrible designs, bad designs, cruel designs in nature. Whereas Dr. Babuna and I, when we look at nature, we see incredible elegance and sophistication, God's fingerprints. And many times what biologists point to as being bad designs turn out to actually be elegant designs when we learn more about those systems. Those systems make perfect sense and, again, are befitting of a creator's handiwork. So I think because there is this psychological, philosophical, and theological component to the evolutionary paradigm, I think that Darwin still may have advanced his paradigm and been committed to it, not again because of the scientific evidence at hand, but because he needed something like that, in his view, to solve the problem of evil.
Thank you so much, Dr. Fazal Rana. It was a pleasure having you on our show.
Thank you so much for having me, Zahn. It was a pleasure to be with you, and again, a pleasure to be also with Dr. Akhtar Babuna.
Thank you so much, Dr. Akhtar Babuna, for being on our show. It was a pleasure having you.
Thank you very much to be part of this very fruitful conversation, and it was a pleasure to see Dr. Rana also. I look forward to see Dr. Rana and Zahn, both of you in Istanbul soon.
This is Dr. Akhtar Babuna, a prominent Turkish scientist, and also Dr. Fazal Rana, an American biochemist scientist, discussing the topic of errors of Charles Darwin. Until the next episode, this is Ayan Khan. Take care.